Chapter 61. The concierge at Gilsey House called out to Aconi and Tiana as they hurried across the marble lobby to meet Phineas McNabb and Preston Winters for breakfast. They were going to map out a plan to find Thomas, who had not returned to his room after walking out into the snow late last night. Aconi considered ignoring the concierge. He probably just wanted to make another restaurant recommendation or help them find tickets to some popular theater event. On the other hand, a good hotel concierge was a fountain of gossip and tidbits of news. Who knew? When they neared his desk, the concierge stepped away and motioned for them to sit with him on an upholstered settee next to a huge indoor fern that blocked them from the view of other hotel guests.
"I am told that you have lost, that is, that you cannot find Colonel Scoundrel,"
the concierge began.
Aconi's face brightened.
"You have news of him?"
"Alas, of that I cannot be certain, but I have heard something this morning that I believe may be worth your looking into."
"Anything you know will be of real help, I'm certain of that," said Tiana.
She had paced her room all night, and by sunrise she was dressed and knocking at Aconi's door.
"I hope that may be the case," replied the concierge. "This morning I had coffee with a group of friends who, like me, concierge for several of the better hotels in the city. Our conversations are never dull, I can tell you that. So much happens behind the closed doors of these establishments that only a concierge is privy to. Honestly, you would be astonished to hear what goes on upstairs."
He raised his eyebrows as if looking to heaven. Aconi was growing impatient.
"The Colonel," he growled.
"Yes, of course, the Colonel. One of my friends works at the hotel where the crime editor of the New York News lives. They swap gossip every morning, which makes my friend the absolute first and finest source of titillating—"
Aconi glared, and the man sighed and continued.
"This morning my friend learned of a murder that took place at Sweeney's Saloon in the Five Points last night."
Tiana clapped her hand over her mouth, and Aconi wrapped an arm around her shoulder.
"No, the Colonel is not the victim,"
said the concierge.
"I am certain of that."
"Then why would this crime be of interest to us?"
Aconi asked.
"According to my friend, the murdered man was Tal Sweeney, twin brother of Coots Sweeney, who both owns the establishment and controls the largest Irish gang in the city. They call themselves the Sundowners."
"And?" asked Aconi.
"Tarl was stabbed to death by a tall, lean man in his 20s, with thick brown hair and green eyes, dressed like a gentleman. No one had ever seen him in there before last night."
Aconi's eyes narrowed.
"And so you think it is possible that Colonel Scoundrel
is the murderer?"
whispered the concierge. Tears welled in Tiana's eyes.
"No,"
she said.
"This isn't possible. It cannot be true. Not Thomas, not our Thomas."
"Has this been in the papers yet?"
Aconi asked.
"No, and it may not be covered at all."
Aconi was surprised.
"Not in the papers? How's that possible?"
The concierge smiled.
"If every murder committed in Five Points was reported, there would be no room in the paper for any other news. Frankly, the tale of one flea-bitten Mick killing another is of no interest to the genteel classes. Kill a Madison Avenue banker, on the other hand, and you'll read little else on the front page for weeks, especially if it was a jilted mistress who pulled the trigger."
Aconi was quiet for a moment.
"And this is as much as your friend knows?"
The concierge nodded.
"I will ask around and find you immediately, should I come into more information."
Aconi and Tiana stood to go.
"One more thing,"
said Aconi.
"Is he in police custody?"
The concierge shook his head.
"Oh no, my friend. If Colonel Scoundrel was indeed the man who killed Tarl Sweeney, he is being held someplace far more dangerous than a police station."
Thomas woke to the smell of stale beer, mold, and rat droppings. He was sitting upright, with his arms lashed to a post,
and the light streaming in from a row of small windows reflected off patches of ice that spotted the rock walls. A pair of boots walked past the window, which told him he was being held in a basement. His head throbbed, and he could feel matted blood in his hair. Not the best of mornings, perhaps, but the only emotion he felt when he opened his eyes was surprise. Why was he still alive? Why didn't they finish the job last night? He did not have long to wallow in that thought. A door creaked open, and footsteps echoed down the stairs.
"Good Lord, the smell!" said Harold, the bartender.
He was holding a lantern in one hand and pinching his nose with the other. Three large men came down the stairs and stood behind him, holding clubs in their hands.
"But considering what's waiting for you upstairs, I suppose this was the perfect place for you to enjoy your last good night of sleep."
He chuckled at his own joke and nodded to the men, who untied Thomas and lifted him to his feet. They held his arms tightly and marched him up the stairs, through the open door, and out into the center of the tavern's main floor. He blinked in the bright light and took in the strange scene. The tables that had covered the floor last night had been pushed over against the walls, and a long wooden plank table had been set up in the center of the room. A half dozen men were seated at the table, some with mugs of beer, a few with coffee. Only the chair in the middle of the table was empty. Leaning over the railing above them, four of the upstairs girls, still wearing their nightclothes, were waiting for the proceedings to begin. The three men who hauled him out of the basement stepped to the side of the room, while Harold stayed beside him. Thomas's arms ached, and he wasn't yet warm enough to feel his fingers. Harold shuffled side to side, looking and feeling more nervous than Thomas. Whatever was in store for him, Thomas realized, could also be waiting for that fat barman. Then a door opened behind the bar, and a man emerged and walked quickly to the table, where he took the center chair. Thomas felt his jaw drop. The man sitting a few feet in front of him was tall and broad-shouldered with pale blue eyes, a thick mass of red hair and shaggy red beard. He was stunned. It was the man he had killed only hours before. Harold saw the look of shock and surprise on Thomas's face. He leaned in and whispered,
"No, it's not him. This is Coots Sweeney, Tarl's twin brother."
Thomas could only shake his head and stare into space. A petite woman brought a pot of coffee and a mug and placed them on the table in front of Sweeney. She poured for him, kissed him lightly on the forehead, and then joined the guards watching Thomas from against the wall. "This has all the feelings of a trial," he thought. "It shouldn't be too difficult for the jury to reach a conclusion, of course, particularly since he had no intention of presenting any kind of defense." Sweeney took a drink of coffee and talked quietly with the men sitting beside him. Then he directed his attention to Thomas.
"The Cullen card in your jacket pocket says your name is Colonel Thomas E. Scoundrel," he said in a deep voice, tinged with a hint of Irish brogue. "That would be the Civil War scoundrel, the one pictured in that painting."
He pointed to the colorful 6-foot-wide battle scene hanging behind the bar. Thomas nodded, but did not reply.
"Is that the way it really happened?" Sweeney continued. "Were you surrounded by that many Rebs? And did your horse rear back like that in the middle of the fight? And did you hold the flagpole out like that?"
"Some of it is true," Thomas found himself answering in a quiet voice. "The part about my horse, Cornwall, and the flag. Other parts came from the artist's imagination." Sweeney slapped his hand on the table.
"I knew it. Damned if I didn't. I fought with the New York Irish, and I have told people for years that real battles don't play out like in your paintings."
Thomas was mystified. He saw no grief on Sweeney's face at the loss of his brother, heard no sorrow in the tenor of his voice. He had expected to be facing a firing squad or a hangman's noose, and yet here they were, talking about a piece of art. He shifted on his feet and wished for a cup of coffee. Then one of the prostitutes on the upper floor called out,
"You can raise your flagpole like that with me any time, Colonel Darling."
Her friends laughed, and even Sweeney could not suppress a smile. He cleared his throat and said,
"Here's the thing, Colonel. Outside the 5 points, you may be a national hero. You may have fully deserved that medal and the invitation to the White House and all the quim that has no doubt been laid down before you. What with the ladies liking to spread their legs for a genuine hero. But here, in my world, you are nothing but a murderer. And that's what we are here to deal with today."
Good, Thomas thought. Let's get on with it. One of the men at the table leaned over and said something to Sweeney. The Irishman shook his head in agreement and said,
"It has been pointed out to me that we have a few matters to resolve with our own bartender, who did not perform his duty properly when the dust started flying last night. How long have you been with me, Harold?"
The bartender took 2 steps forward.
15 years, Mr. Coutts. The best years of my life."
Then he stepped back and clasped his hands in front of him.
15 years, replied Sweeney. "And you have been a fine employee. But last night, you had one job to do. Pull that damn trigger and send the good colonel to perdition before he gutted my brother like a fish. You failed. And now you must be punished. I can't have people just walk into my joint and kill my family now, can I? What would that do to my reputation?"
Thomas looked to the side and saw a wet stain spreading across the front of the bartender's trousers.
"Here's my judgment," said Sweeney. "Pack your bags and get the hell out of here right now. I never want to see your face again. Go uptown to one of them Jew saloons or to Polish Street. They'll hire you."
He made a dismissive motion with his hand.
"Now get."
The woman who brought coffee to the table came back into the room with a plate of food, which she set in front of Sweeney. She refilled his coffee, and then, to Thomas's great surprise, she filled another cup and brought it over to him. Sweeney took a few bites and wiped his mouth with his sleeve.
"Now then, Colonel, to the matter of my brother. My late brother. Oh, I hated the bastard, of course. Never worked a day in his life. Drank my whiskey, ate my food, banged my whores without paying, and beat the hell out of my customers. I can't count the bribes I paid over the years to keep him out of the tombs."
He turned to the men around him in mid-sentence and said,
"Did you know that the government geniuses who built that piss-pot of a jail decided to build it over an old sewage pond, and that it started to stink the minute it was finished? They say 5 points was born the day the sewer shit seeped up out of that pond and started to pour down the corridors of that so-called Hall of Justice."
Thomas was confused. Was Sweeney going to put a bullet through his head or pin a medal on his chest?
"A man in my position with my responsibilities must be mindful of his reputation," Sweeney began. "Reputation above all. If folks begin to doubt my resolve, if they think for a minute that I've grown soft, all this,"
he made a sweeping motion around the room with his arm,
"will disappear. Those who wish me ill need to know that they'll have an ice pick up their arse if they so much as look cross-eyed in my direction. Ain't that right, boys?"
The men at the table nodded in unison.
"Now, letting old Harold slither out of here with his entrails intact warrant a sign of weakness. He earned his retirement with 15 years of service, but you, Colonel, present a bucket load of possible troubles for me for what you did last night. People, and by that I mean my enemies, would see it as a sign of weakness if my brother's death wasn't avenged. If you'd killed him so much as 1 inch outside my door, we might be able to come to some kind of accommodation. Oh, I'd have to take a hand or an eye or something just to keep up appearances. But at least you might have been able to live out your life as a live cripple. But you didn't kill him off premise.
You did him in my house, in front of my customers. And for that there can be no accommodation.
Sweeney took a minute and finished his breakfast, and Thomas emptied his coffee. It would have been nice to sit down, but he didn't think asking for a chair was a good idea. The Irishman pushed his plate away and pulled a pipe from his vest pocket. He filled it, accepted a match from the man beside him, and took a few puffs before continuing.
And so, here we are, Colonel. The fact of your guilt is not in dispute. Do you agree?
I do, Thomas replied.
And the matter of my reputation is no small thing. Do you also agree with that?
Seems so, answered Thomas, without a trace of emotion.
You know, Colonel, you're something of a mystery to me. Here I am, condemning you to death, and yet you put up no fight. You're young and strong, and you've been a fighting man. But you're taking this like a child who got caught sneaking a look up his maiden aunt's petticoats. Where's your passion, man? Have you no pride?
Thomas looked Sweeney in the eye, but said nothing.
Where was his passion, indeed?
The man sitting next to Sweeney spoke up.
The problem, as I see, it ain't in the execution part, Coots, but in how we do it. This man is a national hero, and you don't whack a hero over the head with a club or shoot him in the back and toss him in a ditch. That would be a hell of a thing for your reputation.
All the heads around the table nodded in agreement.
Well, then, asked Sweeney.
He lived as a hero, she said. So if you want to save your reputation, you're going to have to make sure he dies like one, too.
Sweeney wrapped his hand around his coffee mug and stared at the tabletop. Then he raised his head and said,
Damned if it ain't the smartest thing I've heard all morning.
He stood and walked over to Thomas.
Die like a hero, he said in a matter-of-fact voice. How the hell do I make that happen, Colonel Scoundrel?
Thomas replied with a half-smile. You're the boss man around here. I guess you'll just have to figure that one out for yourself.